Welcome to this episode of Coffee with Source. I'm grateful that you're here. Today we're going to be digging into the edge of spirituality in medicine, which is a topic that is on the rise, and I'm so excited about it. For me, spirituality not only means to have faith in something greater than I, but it also means wholeness, oneness, especially with ourselves, that connection with our body, mind, and soul. I feel that is so important and often overlooked in our culture, in our society here in North America. We diagnose an issue and we treat it without really digging in further to the root cause. And sometimes the root is not just in our physical bodies, but stems from our mind. Taking a look at our emotional wellness, our physical wellness, is part of the broader picture. And I'm grateful that more doctors like Dr. Serena are really leaning into this and starting to incorporate it into their practice. Thanks for being here. Enjoy the episode. Welcome to this episode of Coffee with Source. My guest is Dr. Serena, and we're going to be discussing the edge of spirituality and medicine. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
I'm so grateful to have this conversation with you.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And that's, you know, again, that's what definitely drew me to your podcast is this concept of spirituality, is that it's so much more than some crystals or some tarot cards, which, don't get me wrong, I definitely have around my apartment some oracle cards, like, you know, my shelf below.
I think it's really bringing to the forefront the body, mind, spirit connection.
Exactly.
And that's what's missing in Western medicine. But before we dive into that, can you share with our listeners a little bit about yourself? Because I love what you said to me before we hit record about, I just kind of found out we have souls. that was your first statement to me, and I loved it. I was like, wow, that's magic right there.
Right?
Yeah.
So with that question, it was, yeah, great. So what brought you here? And I was like, well, part of being so passionate about this topic was, and I'll expand on that too. So a little over 2 years ago, I found out that we had a soul. In February 2019, I did not see myself in New York City, which is where I was practicing for, so probably about 4 or 5 years at the time. And I'm someone that I always like to have some sort of vision of what's my life looking like. It's not to be planned out, but just
what's next.
To just have a general idea, what's my trajectory, reflect on where I've been. And all of a sudden, and I remember this, I would think of, okay, February 2020, so it was the beginning of 2019, and it was like I saw this black hole. And I tried sitting with myself multiple times to somehow move past this abyss, but I literally couldn't. And not gonna lie, it was kind of scary because I have this whole life ahead of me, and why is it stopping?
Dying?
And like, right. Like in
all this vision.
Little did I realize. So fast forward about 6 months, and I had this horrible knee injury in gymnastics. So I was a competitive gymnast, quote unquote, back in the day, but I had gone back in my early 30s. And there was something about this injury. I mean, the whole gym heard my knee pop. Yeah. I couldn't leave the house for 5 days. And I was like, but this was a trick I could do on the beach or on grass. Like, it wasn't, well, to me anyway, like that difficult. So afterwards, I got home, and that's when it now really hit again. Now it's 6 months in, still a black hole. And part of that story too was, as I called someone And they were like, no, well, actually, and it was pretty matter of fact too. So it's like, oh, here's this human saying this. No, like, you have a soul. You were born into this life for a reason and to learn certain lessons and so on and so forth. And I looked at her and I was like, what do you mean? What the F is a soul?
And I find that shocking that you'd never questioned it before. It's never something that had come to the forefront of your mind of what is driving this meat suit, even studying medicine. Like, who's the pilot of this meat suit that never...
Even the term meat suit, I just heard recently too, which now I can definitely laugh at. But I mean, in naturopathic school, there were those words floating around. You know, sometimes people would say Mercury retrograde. There was probably talk of it, but at that point in time, whether there was or wasn't, I literally couldn't receive it because so much of my life was go, go, go. Yeah. Keep achieving. I was in school straight through from 2 to 27. I grew up on the Upper East Side of New York City, went to one of the top private schools. I had a resume of accomplishments of where I've spoken, where I've performed music, you know, just go down the list. Yet when I was 15 was when an elbow injury, noticing a pattern here, was when I, during gymnastics, fell into a depression. I knew it wasn't me, so I went to the library and started reading Jung, Erikson, and Freud because I just knew there was something deeper. So I never questioned it per se, it was more like...
Okay, but I have to ask because how did you think the system worked? And I'm asking because I'm curious to know.
What system? We grow up pleasing people, making sure our parents, our family, our teachers, because I actually noticed myself doing this in med school too, with attendings and residents, we're all happy and satisfied. Mm-hmm. And then we work and keep working. We fulfill the American dream in whatever way possible and get, and I mean, I did say, I always knew I wanted to eventually, yes, get married and have kids and all that, but there was still part of that was like, oh my God, like, can't someone just take me off the market or can't my life just get easier? There was always a little bit of that. But again, my general community network.
Yeah.
There was no talk. Well, again, if there was talk, I was so closed off. Like, I was literally in no position to notice that. To that, though, I will say, when I was a little girl, I used to go out in the backyard of, well, my parents had a second home in upstate New York, and I used to sit on this rock, and it was one of my favorite things to do if I wasn't climbing the tree, doing the same thing, and just stare at the sky and wonder why we're here. Like, okay. Seriously, what?
You had an inkling.
Yeah, like, what are humans?
Yeah.
What is this life, this construct? Yeah. And I was probably about 3 or 4 years old when I was doing that. However, yeah. I also remember it was second grade. I remember my teacher was disappointed in me for not handing in a homework assignment on time, something I always expected of myself. And I just remember the immense amount of shame. And I know I carried that with me. I've had a lot of underlying addictions, mood, depression. Later on was when the hormone piece started. What I can see now is that I didn't understand to the depths of what a person can really carry. So you could say the fast forward from there, but then to now, not that long ago, it was actually around 2020 when everything happened. But again, in this big picture, where else do we need to slow down, had to get the rug pulled out from under us and look at our lives? Did I tear through my natal chart? I was in a type of counseling where I was also mapping out my lineage, even when it came to behavior, how we handle conflicts. And it was still, it is, so enlightening to understand
Doesn't it make more sense?
100%.
I love what you said before we hit record. And I think that's such a something that we have to underline and highlight right now. You said, what is your vision now? Share with our listeners, someone who used to come in with a cancer diagnosis or a Parkinson's diagnosis before this conscious awakening of yours versus now, how do you see those diagnostics differently?
So it's interesting you ask this question, because part of my journey was, I remember when I was in med school, it was the second year, and that's when we learned diagnostics.
Mm.
Even a cold, it would freak me out to diagnose someone and say, you have this. And actually recently I've done a lot of work around this. And what I realized is because, and this is what I've both seen in practice, I've had tendencies, is that we can cling to a diagnosis and make that part of our identity. So why would I tell someone something when I think back then I knew that they weren't going to be bound to it? Mm. But how could I have the words to say that? How, there was probably a lot more to unpack, because at that moment, solely putting a diagnosis on something seemed really scary. So fast forward, and you know, of course, now being in a state where I am doing diagnoses, so how can I actually tell patients certain things? Well, let's look at the different meanings. What if it correlates to a chakra? What if there's habits and lessons that maybe were throughout your family, and there's something in there that's that you now need to be responsible for? So how can we turn it into a place of empowerment? Because at the end of the day, at the end of people's lives, which theoretically we don't really know anyway, like we can't promise life forever. Sure, our life expectancies have changed, you know, over the centuries and, you know, even decades, but in any moment, what would it mean to be at your happiest or most fulfilled? And that's usually what people report, you know, or even on their deathbed, or when they know, let's say, if things are slower and they know they're getting ready for their crossing over. No one's saying, can you balance my hormones or can I lose the last few pounds?
No.
The biggest questions become, have I given back to the world? Have I made an impact? Have I made a difference? Because we could say all these meditations or, oh, step back and be present, but it's all also in prep for those moments. So when you do cross over, when that time does come, it's fine.
I love that. And I heard a study recently that's, you know, they were, it was about people who were given a terminal diagnosis, and 73% of the people who were told they had 6 months to live actually died within that time frame. And then they did the same study where they didn't give the people a time frame, and they actually went on to live for years, and some of them even, you know, went into remission and were able to heal themselves. So labeling someone, as you said, kind of imposes on to them the fact that they have to own it.
And I'd say a third piece to that too, is where I've also seen, is that sometimes we may give the diagnoses, but if there's really no hope around the conversation, if there's, I guess you could say hope, vision,
and alternative tools and techniques.
Yeah. Or the,
what about, you have this very aggressive form of cancer, you know, chemo or radiation would probably slow it down, as well as, you know, what about yoga? What about doing some ancestral clearing? What about looking at your energy field and where you might have blockages, looking at the whole system, the body, mind, and spirit?
Literally, because that's, you know, then from that place of where, if we are giving the patient the tools and the education, or even people, to say, well, actually, what would a reflection look like for you? Mm. Are you let's say contributing as much as you'd like? Are your friends who you want them to be? You know, just not just, oh, I want this and I want accomplishments and I want to do this, this and that. It's like, no, if we step back, it's really in that soul's calling, which is truly that inner voice, because then you can have, let's say, but you know, even though we may be looking at 6 months, at the same time, as we shift our energy, because anything physical has been happening in the emotional and the etheric and the spiritual first before it comes into this very dense form. But there's also patients who live well beyond this diagnosis and this prognosis. We have the power to change what our cells are doing. We have the power to affect our vibration. So therefore, even if you're giving a type of prognosis or a potential timeline, then all of a sudden it becomes, oh wait, I still have the power to do something. And because on the flip side, that third piece is that you may have people say, oh, well, the doctor gave me 6 months to live. And I was like, you know what? They like blow their bank account. They travel the world. They break up with like that spouse they've been meaning to. And all of a sudden they step into this, oh, what's just going to light me up and make me happy? And it's not that, you know, they may not have a few hiccups along the way, but their perspective does like a total 360. And all of a sudden, they're living their life. And now it's 10 years later.
Yeah. But they have to stop living from a place of should.
Yeah.
And it's living from a place of, you know, no regrets. Nothing's keeping me down. Nothing's weighing me down.
And most importantly, you know, then you could say, well, look what their body and this experience was teaching them, was how can they really enjoy life? Because then they'll usually say, if they knew at this point back then, they would have done things a lot differently.
It brings the saying, follow your heart, listen to your heart, to a whole new meaning.
Oh my God. And then when we realize all the stuff, the scripts, realizing what we may have been told growing up. And it's interesting, because I just thought of a book, and this was something I was unpacking a lot a few years ago. It's called Where the Girls Are by Susan J. Douglas. Mm. And, you know, for any women watching or even any men, you know, feel free to even take a browse as well. And what was so amazing is that, because especially with women, our relationships, they can be intricate and messy, yet so fulfilling. There's so much to them. Yet this book actually illustrated how, like, through the decades, women get so many messages. And I laugh because it actually kind of calls out how we're usually called crazy. Well, actually, this book was like, well, yeah, actually, if you look at literally like every stereotype of every generation, what parents are telling their kids that are telling their kids that are telling their friends that are.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh my God, we've literally come to this breaking point, both energetically, even with what's going on in the world, spiritually, like the different resonances and the astrology. It's like where we are at this bursting at the seams. So then what scripts do we want to write moving forward about our health, our
body? It's ironic because I feel like many of us who have had a conscious awakening or spiritual awakening in the last few years, a big part of that is we've spent, you know, the first half of our lives or first quarter of our lives learning all of these things. And now the mission is to unlearn a lot of these constructs, to relearn, to question them, to ask the questions of, what if my parents were wrong? What if they didn't have all of the answers? What other possibilities lie ahead for us as a whole, for humanity as a whole?
100%. And that's where, like, it's not a reflection on them. It's their parents before, their parents before that. And that's what I love, what this book alluded to, was that it takes a lot of the blame or the onus, let's say, off one person or say the parents or the grandparents or whoever raised you.
Yeah.
You know, and it just gives such a different insight into, okay, so we know that this is out there. Even the studies, like you can look back at least 7 different generations for influences, you know, into who we are. Yet once we take that responsibility, you could say too, oh, well, what's on the other side, or that lighter energy. And I'm not saying, you know, okay, well, here's where the journey's going to be. You may fall first into the pits of hell and then feel like you've unpacked everything only to go off another cliff again. And that could be within an hour. So it's something like that too.
Yeah.
But isn't that really cool?
It is really cool. One of the most unhelpful and most hindering things we've been taught as a collective is that love is an emotion. And we use love in our society as, you know, a bartering system and a reward system. When we're upset or we're feeling unworthy, we withhold love or we give too much of love. But actually, love is our natural state of being. That is what we are. And if we operated with that mindset in every aspect of our life, without judgment, how much healthier and more whole we would be as individuals and as a collective. And I feel that there would be a lot less dis-ease and discomfort in the world.
I think especially from the discomfort. And, you know, and that's where I feel like
depression, we think of anxiety, we think of all of these potential fears, you know, our nervous systems are completely on. They're either totally on or they're totally off because we're constantly bombarded with these thoughts and feelings and emotions. We're not taught to regulate from the point of this is our natural state of being, how to learn and tune into our body's cues. You know, we feel pain. We feel pain in our body. We run to the doctor because we don't even know. We don't even have a relationship with our bodies. You know, this is an incredibly sophisticated system here.
And that's what I kept seeing is I remember giving patients supplements that had all the studies behind it, but why wasn't it working for them? Pick your concern, weight, a hormone type of balance, metabolism, thyroid, fat burning. And maybe it was part of who I was attracting. Maybe it was, you know, was it a premonition to what I would eventually be going through and learn to also understand, you know, everything I've come from and continue to go through. But I love what you said earlier, that state of love, because was it agape, you know, that main word. And we're also taught that love only exists in certain relationships or
certain kinds of love are appropriate,
right? Like there's different types, and while we may have the feelings towards, but then what's the emotion? And there's
so much judgment attached to it.
And I remember there being like so much around it. So after that awakening, I think I had a few months where I was trying to figure this out in my head. Like, wait, you mean we're not put on this earth to please people? And we were actually chosen, which means we have a purpose. And it was like a whole world opened up. I freaked out. Fortunately, I did know a healer at the time. Ironically, it was on her podcast. I think it was a few years ago. And I called her and I worked so intensely with her for probably the next 4 or 5 months or so. And that's where I part joke, like, I was just getting ready, because then we could even talk to you like that, integrating yourself back into society. Or even along the healing journey, let's say where you've made nutritional changes, lifestyle changes, established boundaries. Now you're also integrating yourself back in, and yet people may not understand or say, no. Well, why do you think like this? Or no, what are you talking about? And it was actually right when I was ready to like pop my head out was early March 2020. If that's any indication of the universe saying, no, go keep studying.
Yeah. Goodbye. Yeah. And that's a concept that, you know, that I teach when I work with my clients as well. And it's healing your relationship with food, healing, you know, your internal state and upgrading your mindset. But in particular, our relationship with food is a reflection of our relationship with the world around us. And we've lost touch that we're actually meant to be fueling our bodies and not eating to survive. But by fueling our bodies, it's going back to the basics that everything has an energetic field. Everything is energy. Everything has a consciousness. Everything has a vibration. And that even feeling gratitude for our food is not something that we practice anymore as a society. You know, to be grateful for the food that we have, to be mindful as we're preparing it, to feel into that present moment when we're cooking and nourishing our bodies and giving thanks for how it's fueling our bodies. These are all really important parts of living in our bodies and fueling it for optimal wellness, wouldn't you say?
100%. And total testament to that too, is that you're right, because it does take a type of presence, especially if we weren't always raised with it. Or I will say too, I was raised with having breakfast and dinner when we all sat down, you know, of course, before my dad went off to work and I went off to school. But from college to med school, you know, eventually our lives, you know, we could say, oh, they wind up becoming a certain way, but it's like, no, that's not being responsible for yourself.
Yeah.
If you set that intention, and as I continue to even check myself, because I am vigilant, I want to continue to be vigilant because it helps me evolve in that presence of, yeah, it's actually really hard to be present at every single meal, every single day, to actually breathe in, not just to your food, but to say thank you. Mm-hmm. I mean, like we sat down and it was nice as a family, but grace, you know, was just not part of it, just, you know, for who we were, which is fine. But in this way, how can I take a breath before I eat?
Even thanking, you know, the water that we drink in the morning. There's been studies, you know, I think it's Dr. Emoto, the study on water, on how you know, you feel grateful or you thank the glass of water, how it changes the molecular structure of the water. And so learning to lean into that living mindfulness can have a huge impact on our overall health and well-being.
Well, especially because we're what, over 70% fluids or water, I should say.
Yeah. But, you know, and when you live from that place of gratitude, and for me, it's become, you know, almost over the top. For someone who's listening, who's just starting their journey, might say she's a little weird, but even being grateful for indoor plumbing, like I catch myself sometimes being like, you know what? It's 40 below zero outside and I have indoor plumbing and I'm going for my cushy poop and I've got toilet paper. Like, can you imagine 200 years ago? That must have been awkward and really cold and uncomfortable. And I'm grateful for this moment. But when you catch yourself doing little things like that, you start to live more present in your life, more present in your body, and you start to live from a place of love, from a place of appreciation.
Yes. And sometimes, and what I've noticed too, is that it can actually happen unconsciously. Mm. Like I've now, I notice when I wake up in the morning, I won't get out of bed. Like unless I'm grateful for something or in a, okay, I'm ready to tackle the day and I won't go to sleep.
My life.
Yeah.
Gratitude saved my life when I didn't know what else to do and was in the the dark night of the soul, finding something to be grateful for, even if it was living 15 seconds at a time. And now that's become my ritual. Part of my self-care is 30 minutes in the morning, and it's waking up, and I wake up earlier to make time for that kind of sleepy in between snoozy state of just, okay, what am I grateful for? You know, I'm grateful that I can open my eyes. I'm grateful for my body. I'm grateful for my bed. I'm grateful for the warmth. And then shit just keeps pouring out, and you realize you have a lot to be grateful for.
And I love what you said too. It's that, you know, you're waking up. It's not just that you're waking up a little earlier to make time for it. And because I know we're on the same page, it's a lot of what I talk about too, is it's not like you're forcing yourself. Okay. You're setting an alarm, but what you're noticing is like, oh wait, this is something you enjoy and you want to make time for. So then it began naturally happening. So that's something too, is like giving yourself that grace. As
I love that word. That's what I was going to say. And being in harmony with my body, does that make sense? Like I stretch and I feel into it and I breathe deeply and I can notice it. And I kind of giggle, you know, cause I'm like this, you know, it just feels, it feels good. That moment feels good. And now it's part of my day. It's like a non-negotiable, not something I have to do, but it's something I won't give up.
Exactly. I mean, I remember, was it years ago? So I was in, it's called BNI, Business Networking International. I was in it for like 3 years. It's this very like, we have 7 a.m. meetings every week, like very, you know, go, go, go. And I used to, oh my God, I used to go to so many different chapters. Sometimes I had 12-hour days. But one of the members in our meeting, you know, he had a whole morning routine. But yet the days of BNI, I remember him sharing that that meant that he was now getting up at like 4 a.m. or, you know, just, and I remember thinking, oh God, like who would do that? Like yeah. Just for a routine or just, but oh, do I get it now?
Because how it's
developed.
Yeah. And it's my moment with Source just to, you know, just to be.
Exactly.
And that's healing. That's really healing. You know, and when you notice a little ache or a little something that's feeling off in your body or your tummy's feeling a little off, you can have a conversation with your body and say, does this really belong to me? Does this belong to us? Did we absorb anything throughout the night? You know, when we were laying there, did we travel to another realm and pick up a little bug? Can we just return to sender?
Or is that like, I was like that while you're sleeping like 10 hours a night?
I brought back a bug from the astral planes, but no, it's something that's delightful. And I used to have the same thing, like, oh my God, they're waking up at a ridiculous time, or the people who jog like 5 a.m. is like, what are you doing with your life? And now it's kind of like, I get it. That's their meditation. That's their medicine. That's their time for them. So whatever it look, whatever you design it to look like for yourself, you know, it doesn't have to be going for a run. It doesn't have to be laying in bed for 30 minutes, but whatever feels right to you.
And I love what you said before too, about like having those different times and those different options. And sometimes, yeah, you're waking up at 5 a.m. Maybe sometimes not, because
it's something I tried to fight for years, was convincing myself that successful people all woke up at 4 a.m. They would have a cold shower. They would read a whole book. They would have a freshly pressed ginger shot. I was sure that that's what success, like if I, you know, my millionaire mindset, I have to do that because that's what I read. That's what I read. And it's what all those social media posts would say, you know, the millionaire mindset, up at 4 a.m., cold showered. Dude, you can't get me into cold water. Like my body, like, no, like I have a visceral reaction. Like I'd rather scratch my own eyes out. You learn that that's not for everyone. That's something I have to unlearn. What feels right for me is a warm shower in the morning. 4 a.m. doesn't feel particularly well or good to me every day of the week. I'm a basket case. Like it doesn't work. But that everybody's unique.
Yeah.
And what works for me doesn't necessarily work for someone else. But as long as we are taking inspired action, moving towards our goals, and we're in alignment with ourselves energetically, then whatever routine is meant for us, that works.
Yes. Oh my God. And it's funny because I actually had that thought too, where I just got like super, so like, wait, oh my God. Yes. You hit on so many great points. Is that I was thinking about that not that long ago too, like that wake up early, you know, again, like you pretty much killed, you know, not kill the day, sorry. So we're like slay the day before the day even started. And here's the really cool part, you know, so much of what we're talking about, this owning yourself, this taking responsibility, this nourishing your body, is okay, what do I need? Because there really is that fine line between like, okay, to be motivated and then that listening,
pushing
to
your yourself
body.
A little bit and just being a yes. sloth, you know.
But here's the really cool part is that because we are human, we are free, that is our inherent birthright. I've done this too, like you can actually try, hey, you know what, maybe try setting your alarm at 4 a.m. and take a really cold shower and read part of a chapter of a book. Yep. And you could just try it and see what happens.
Yeah.
And that's the really cool part. You can play around.
Yeah. I love that. Play with it. And you don't have to commit to it for ever and ever. And I think there's something really sacred and magical about not waking up to an alarm when your body's ready to wake up. It's ironic, but what I've learned through time is when I set an alarm, I always hit snooze at least 5 times. My body's like, no, we're so good here. Thanks. Thank you so much for your valuing effort. And when I don't set an alarm, I'm always up 30 to 45 minutes before the alarm. And I wake up like all stretchy, like a kitten, and all like purry and loving life. And, you know, and that's so important.
I hear you. I mean, I was always a morning person. I rarely used an alarm clock in my life. And what I will say though is, I don't want to say just post-spiritual awakening, because, you know, and I'll talk to my patients about this too, healing is anything but linear. We may have a certain routine, hit a snafu in our life, and all of a sudden you realize, oh my God, we don't like this anymore. Something has to change. Or yeah, you know what? Maybe our routine is starting to take steps towards looking at that, you know, millionaire routine.
Millionaire.
However, Marcus Aurelius, who was, I want to say a Roman emperor, I believe, centuries and centuries ago, he was actually doing his best work at like 4 p.m.
It's true.
So, and he was like sleeping until noon. So yes.
For me, the creative juices roll at night. So I feel like all the energies of the earth are quiet. And that's when I get so inspired and creative, and you have to roll with it.
Yeah.
As long as you don't stay stagnant.
And so there's
skills. That's when the disease comes in. That's when the discomfort. I love it. I'm so grateful for this conversation. I feel like we'll have to chat again. There's so much.
Definitely.
Yeah. Definitely a colorful conversation. Can you share with your listeners where they can learn more about you on social media, or how can we become groupies?
Yes, sure. So one of my favorite places to hang out is Instagram. So my handle is at @drserenag. So you could find me there. I have all my links. My website is drserenagoldstein.com. And so again, great resource. And I also offer a complimentary 20-minute phone call. So really those two places are just great ways to connect, to book your phone call. I have some free gifts, you know, in that like little link tree there. I use Milkshake. Yeah. So there's lots of ways to connect. And I'm happy to chat if you have any questions, thoughts, or just what's some of your vision moving forward and getting into all those little nitty gritty steps in between?
I'm so excited to know that there are doctors such as yourself, and I know you have a couple friends, even if you're chatting in your private groups and doing your insight that way, that are learning to raise the awareness and elevate the consciousness of humanity, that it is not just a medical body issue, like bringing your car to the garage because your muffler's sputtering. Like, we are not vehicles. We are the body, mind, and spirit, and allowing people to hear from a trusted medical professional, because you guys have weight, to hear that you do, you know, you have weight. And people
stepping into that and knowing that, and this is also, you know, I think such a nice way to end as well. And I'll reiterate some of my info too. But to anyone listening, that whole stepping into your power, mm-hmm. I don't have any doctors in my family, really no higher education, you know, past college. The fact that through some lucky twists and turns, plopping myself right into the middle of Manhattan and starting a practice. When I began looking at my life, it wasn't just about health. I looked at the events, how things happened, why things were happening, and then trying to put those pieces together, because I've always, for my purpose, for my vision in the world, you're right, to bring this into medicine, I've actually began noticing that I do have quite a number of colleagues. It was actually a colleague talking about past lives at a conference that hit me like a ton of bricks. And that was actually why I wound up going to that healer. Was like, I need to find a way to be able to talk about this in medicine and perhaps give my colleagues that platform and the chutzpah, which is Yiddish.
This is glorious. This is music to my ears, because I feel like maybe centuries ago when you would work with a medicine man, it was about the body, it was about the mind, it was about the herbs, it was about the affirmations, it was about working with all of the energies around us. And I feel like you've given me hope tonight to know that there are more exceptional human beings like yourself out there.
There's, I believe, more than I realized. And should my destiny be part of helping lift that, you know, those humans up too, but at the same time be able to say, hey, Western medicine has actually done some incredible stuff.
Absolutely.
But when we do work with people, instead of always, let's say, you know, just to really reframe it in the positive, to then really be able to say, hey, look at all these other things you can help, not just heal, but give you the understanding to who you are. And then, as we spoke about that, nourishing your body, what's your reason for wanting to nourish yourself, and that, and coming from that place, which is the love, the gratitude, the being able to tie it in together while we are here on this short time on earth,
just vibing high, enjoying this short time we have. It was lovely meeting you. Thank you for being here.
You as well.
Please, please, please check the show notes for Dr. Serena's info and go show her some love on Instagram.